Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Diva Strategies for Success. This is Robbie Motter, the host, and I am so excited today. I have a fabulous guest who is calling in from Florida. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Her name is Tess LaBella. She's a SAG-AFTRA award-winning voiceover artist, actor, comic, producer, and children's book co-author. Her original character, Selma Billingwitz, was developed for a sitcom pilot. She's co-hosted a radio show and fronted a multimedia campaign for a South Florida casino. Tess considers a role in the Gil Green written and directed short film, Who is Lou Gehrig?, a career highlight. The critically acclaimed inspiring film raised considerable awareness about the mental and physical struggles of ALS. Through live theater, storytelling, and teaching, Tess has long combined her love of animation, voiceover, with her passion for children's literacy. She's engaged children for decades by leading voiceover workshops and performing for schools and youth groups, personifying everyone from Mrs. Claus to the Big Bad Wolf. As a Jersey Italian, Tess can generally be found with one hand on the studio mic and the other stirring in the Sunday gravy while she's cooked alongside international chefs. Noni, as she is known by her grandchildren, is famous for her white pasta fagioli and never met a meatball she didn't like. Tess lends her voice to nonprofits such as the Society for the Preservation of Great American Songbook Legends Radio, and is a second-term Miami SAG-AFTRA board member and convention delegate. She has been recognized with Comedian of the Year and Outstanding Mentor Awards by the Women in the Arts Miami, and was honored by the Boys and Girls Club of Broward County as one of the 100 Outstanding Women of Broward County. Tess lives in South Florida with her beloved husband, Dr. Freddie Lovitz. She is also a recipient of the She Inspires Me Award 2020, which was to be in Florida this year but was canceled and is going to be in England in September 2021, and is also one of the co-authors in Quarantina and Beyond, a book, and is on the SEMA Advisory Board. And I'm so happy to welcome you to the show today, Tess. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Robbie. Thank you so much. I have been chomping at the bit to do this all day. I've been like on cloud nine knowing that, you know, I was going to be here with you and have this wonderful opportunity.
Well, that's great. I want to know how you got involved in some of these things you're doing. Like, how did you get involved doing voiceover and become an actor and a comedian and a producer and all these things? So share your story and tell me how you got involved, and so we can learn more about you.
Okay, this is really a very interesting story, not the real mainstream, but I'll give you I'll try to give you the short version, but it is kind of long. Anyway, I lived in New Jersey, and I decided when I was in my early 30s, somebody kept saying to me, because I was reading at school and performing and doing all these, you know, Hagatha the Witch, and I would come Christmas time and, you know, do mystery reading, and somebody said to me, I don't know why you don't do voiceover. And I said, you know what, I've wanted to do it all my life, I just don't know how to go about it. So this person said, there's a woman by the name of Hope Noah, and she is an NBC affiliate. She's now retired and teaching voiceover, but you must audition for her class. And this was in Ridgewood, New Jersey. So I called her up, and boy, she was very, very tough. In other words, I didn't think that she was even going to give me the audition because I think with most of these teachers, they want to know that you've started much earlier. Anyway, Robbie, by the grace of God, I went to her home and I auditioned and she put me immediately into classes. Well, while I was doing the classes, I met a stuntman because he needed help. Are you ready for this? He needed help cleaning his stalls, okay? And my parents, you know, we had horses and I was around the farm, and so I really knew how to, you know, how to get around it. And so I said, sure, I could use the money. And he started to teach me the ropes of being a horse handler. So one night he says to me, listen, a couple of my people didn't show up. Would you like to come into New York and help me out? And I said, sure, I'd love to. Well, that started it, Robbie. He was one of the greatest that I know of, stuntman for The Sopranos. He did Kate and Leopold. I mean, his body of work was incredible. As the World Turns at that time was a soap opera that was using horses. So I got the opportunity to be with all of those stuntmen who treated me like gold. Okay, even Mr. Aiello, God rest his soul, you know, Danny Aiello, his son was in stunts, and they were all just wonderful to me. And so I kept continuing studying in voiceover, and then when Hope finished the classes with me, she sent me to New York to Paul Liberti, who I am still, he is still mentoring me. I'm still taking classes because, as you know, you're never good enough. There's always room to learn.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. And then how did you get to be a comedian and you do comic stuff?
Well, I think that came from the hotel that my parents owned. I was very privileged to meet some great entertainers that used to come to my parents' hotel. And it was just something that I loved. I loved entertaining. My family is full of storytellers. They're all funny. Everybody has this big personality. And I don't know, everybody in school, I was class clown when I was in high school. You know, I think, I don't think you can learn to be funny. I really don't think that.
No.
Jackie Gleason used to have a saying that you're either funny or you're not. And I think he's right about that. I mean, I think you can learn to deliver shtick, and anybody can learn to read lines. Like Lucille Ball used to say that she really wasn't funny. In her personal life, she wasn't funny, but she learned how to be funny. Well, maybe she's one in a million, but who's better than her, right? But
that was right.
That's how I started. I started imitating, you know, people that were at the hotels, the chefs, you know, and doing voices and imitating people. And I went through it all through high school and did the drama, you know, club. And it was just something I loved. But my passion, even when I was 9 years old, was to be a voiceover. That's really the truth. I wanted to be Betty Rubble. I would recognize the people in cartoons, you know, and say, oh, my gosh, you know, that's so-and-so. Oh, Gazoo is Harvey Korman. You know, I just knew. I knew I could hear the voices. And,
wow,
boy, did I get in a lot of trouble in school, Robbie, doing that. I was always in the principal's office.
But you probably made their day because they probably had a dull day and having you around made them happy. What was the, you know, that I used to live in New Jersey. Where was your hotel and what was the name of it?
Oh, okay, the name of the hotel was the Clarendon. I just got the chills because I love talking about it. It was one of the greatest times of my life, okay? It was the Clarendon. It was in Hackettstown, New Jersey, where Centenary College is for women.
Oh, yeah, that is.
West. It's west on Route 80 going towards the Delaware Water Gap.
Uh-huh.
And it was a bed and breakfast.
I used to live in Short Hills, New Jersey for 5 years.
Of course. My husband lived in Short Hills and his parents on White Oak Drive.
Yeah, I lived on Damio Place, right up the street from where the old Saks Fifth Avenue used to be, and I used to drive to New York every day to go to work.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
wow.
Wow. So tell me, you know, I met, and I can't think of this, I don't know if I think he was a football player, but I went to an event not about a year ago that they held a special award for this football player that got ALS. I forget his name, but I know that, you know, he was a great football player, and then he came down with it, and they were doing a big, and they had a lot of celebrity football, retired football people there at the golf. It was a golf tournament, but it was for this guy, and I forget his name. But that is an illness that really is sad, because it really, when it hits them, it really hits them. So how did you get involved in that?
Well, that was a blessing. And by the way, I always say this about myself and my career. I always call it a happy accident, okay? So as I continue to go on and unfold this story, you'll see what I mean. So I went for an audition because they had a role for a nurse in Gil Green's movie, who is Lou Gehrig. And he did this. Gil Green, by the way, is one of the biggest hip-hop artists. He's done everybody from, you know, Miami 305. Oh, my gosh, I can't think of his name. Pitbull, John Legend.
All right.
He does videos for these people. Well, he decided that when his friend Jeff Fogel got ALS, that he was going to raise money and have all the proceeds go to helping this man and his cause. Well, he got his buddies, the Miami Heat, behind it, and the announcers that do the Miami Heat games. Everybody came to help Gil do this movie. He wrote it. He directed it. It was incredible. So I show up, and this wonderful casting director, Ed Arenas, who I love dearly, saw something special in me, he said, and he said, Tess, I'm going to have to call you back. So I don't know if I get the audition or not. Well, finally, the next day, calls me and said, listen, you didn't get that part, but they're writing a part in, and that's what you're going to do. Show up, blah, 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 at this address. So I'm thrilled. Okay, I'm going to show up, and I do. And the scene, even though I was there at, let's say, 9 o'clock in the morning, my scene wasn't till 5 o'clock at night. So what they had to do was get Gil, pick him up, and put him in the bathtub. So Jeff Fogel is now in the bathtub. He can't move, by the way, Mom, Robbie. From his neck down, he's paralyzed. So all he can move is his head. Can't move his arms, anything. So they tell me it's my scene, and Gil gives me the direction. He said, listen, all of the dialogue that you memorized, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to just, Jeff is going to lead the scene, and you're just going to improv it. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Now, I was relieved because I'm a better improver than I am a scene person. Do you know what I mean? Like the memorizing of the lines and whatever, that's not my strong suit. But put me in a room and let me talk for hours, I can make your ear bleed. So this was perfect for me. He said, just go with Jeff, whatever he says, just make it your own in the scene, and I'll let you know when we're going to start filming. So we do the scene, and I hear, cut, that's a wrap. One take.
Wow.
He wanted it as raw and as real, and boy, was it ever. It was the most, I mean, I don't care what I do in this industry, that for me, as I say, highlight, that for me was the most incredible, humbling experience in the world to be witness to a man like Jeff who had the courage to tell a story like that about himself and be an inspiration to other people. And I'll be happy to tell you that Jeff is still doing well. He's still, thank God, with us, and he's still an inspiration to everyone.
Wow. That is good. I really believe that when people do share those stories, whatever they are, they do give others the hope or say that makes others feel, wow, I'm not the only one out there dealing with this. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And he was a basketball coach. He coached JCC girls, and he's done it for years. Even in his wheelchair, he did it. Like, the man is just the epitome of faith. You know where you hear that saying, "Let your faith be bigger than your fear." That would should be his motto.
Let your faith be bigger than your fear.
That is who Jeff Fogel is, and I admire and love him dearly. But what an opportunity for me to be witness to all of that and all of that kindness and generosity of all the people that came from all over the country to help Gil do the movie. I mean, really, wow.
Oh, so tell me some other fun things that you've done that have just really moved you into other directions of your life.
Okay, this is a good one. I somehow, through a mutual friend, was introduced to international chef Ian Sherlock. Now, Ian came from Bali, and he was a chef there, and he was trying to do a cooking show, much like a travel cooking show. And let me tell you, what a talented and funny guy. So he says to me, "Tess, I want to come to the United States. It'll be my first time. I'm going to bring my baby." And he's British, by the way. "I want to bring my baby and my wife, and I would like you to help me with the pilot to my cooking show." I said, "Me?" He said, "Yeah, I know. I've been following you on Instagram. You're a fabulous cook. How'd you learn how to cook?" I told him, "Well, my parents had a hotel. We come from cooks, you know, it would be," and that was another thing. I always pictured myself to have this fabulous talk show where I would, you know, interview the people, but then cook them dinner, much like Dinah Shore, right? So I tell him this, and he says, "Well, Tess, this gets off the ground. I would love for you to do this with me." Okay, believe it or not, he does come to the United States, and we do this incredible pilot where we're in the Everglades, we're making ice cream in the Everglades. We cooked on a boat for 8 hours. I made homemade gnocchi. He made some fabulous Asian dish and showed me how to do it with coconut milk. And, I mean, just two continents coming together and cooking. Like, I was cooking Italian. He was cooking, you know, really Indonesian food as well. We just had a blast. And then now he's in Mexico, and he's an executive chef at the El Dorado. But this man has cooked for dignitaries, the presidents, the Bushes, Mandela, the Clintons. I mean, you name it. He's been all over the world cooking. And, I mean, again, wow. See what I mean about accident? So that accident was a really great fortune of mine. And, you know, AT&T U-verse was another one of my, funny kind of things, a very funny story about this. It was a Spanish commercial, and I didn't speak any Spanish at all. And I remember one of the women with me, her name was Maro Holloway, a talented actress, comes to me and says, Tess, they're going to give us lines." Now, Robin, you know, if they give you lines, that means it's more money, and it's great for your IMDb, and you're all excited because you're going to get lines, right? So my one line was, "Que linda." Anyway, during the shooting of this commercial, we were in at Flamingo Gardens right here in, you know, Coral Gables. So I'm in the jungle, and this peacock, you can't even make this up. I'm by myself, and I'm trying to get to the trailer because they're calling me on the little mic to come to the trailer and get touched up for makeup. This peacock starts chasing me, and you hear this. I don't want to do it in your ear. I'll blow your ear out, but it's like, chasing me. So I'm trying to run. I broke the heel of my shoe, the whole heel, trying to get away from the peacock. The whole heel of my shoe. By the time I got to the by the time I got to the trailer, I looked like somebody beat me up and threw me in a ditch. My hair was
all messed.
They were
probably laughing their heads off at something so funny that was not planned.
They were howling. They were howling because the only reason I got it is because the AT&T Uverse guy in Spanish kept saying that I looked like his mother. So I hear from my headshot, so I hear over the little speaker something like Espanol, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, they think I speak Spanish. So I don't. So when I get that he wants to meet me. So now I go to see him. I'm muddy. My hair is all a mess. The shoe is broken. And I show up and I explain it to him. Well, he and his wife were laughing, so he said, you're not Spanish. I said, no, I'm Italian. So he has a good laugh. They take me back to the trailer. They fix me up, and we shoot the commercial. But that was very funny.
I bet that was. I was just picturing it as you were telling me, and it was cracking me up because I'm sure
it was
really
funny. Yeah,
like
I'm running through the flamingo gardens trying to get away. And believe me, the peacock was screaming on the top of its lung. I don't know what I did to deserve that, but... Oh, and now let's talk about Selma Blingowitz. Okay. So this is how Selma Blingowitz came about. In Miami, they have something called Hollywood Across America. And this comes on Facebook. And Ellen Jacoby, who I'm dear friends with today, didn't know her back then. She's one of the nicest casting directors, along with Ed Arenas, that we have down here in Southern Florida. She's amazing. They even named a day after her in Miami, the Ellen Jacoby Day. So what it is it allows actresses or actors like myself to come and present their monologues and take classes in front of very, you know, well-known other casting directors like Lisa Beach, who did Wedding Crashers, and you know, some other really great people in the industry, okay? So you perform a monologue, and I performed a monologue called the Meatball Monologue. And Selma Blingowitz talks about her granddaughter and how she has a happy marriage by making the meatballs, okay? Anyway, it got a standing ovation, and it was really very funny. And Lisa Beach says to me, Tess, when you go home, I want you to develop that character. I want you to know what she looks like, what she wears, the whole thing, and do something with her. So I did. I got my red wig on, and I put her in a leopard, and my husband and I wrote a pilot called Codger's Cove about a senior citizen community where this Selma Blingowitz lived. Now, Robbie, this was based on somebody that I actually met there, okay? And how they used to hate that I cooked because I used to make all the other women look really bad. So this one woman who we call her Fran Rigatoni, and I'm going to leave it at that, she used to call me up on the phone, and she used to go, Tess, it's Fran. I don't know, what are you doing? I could smell, am I smelling meatballs up there? And I'd say, yeah, I am. She goes, I don't know why you do that. We have a grill room. You're making all the women look bad here. Now all these husbands want us to cook like you, and we don't want to. And by the way, you're too fat. You should really lose weight. I swear to you, you can't even make this up. So I decided she would see me, right, coming to go to work, because at the time I was doing acting, but I was also working in a dental office, okay? So she would see me leaving in the morning, and she'd say to me, I don't understand. Your husband is a retired dentist, and you're going to work. Why are you going to work? I said, because I don't want to just sit home. I love to work. It's just something I like. I want to feel busy and accomplished and whatever. Oh, she goes, that's nonsense. She says, you should be playing tennis and mahjong like everybody else. So she would take a look at my nails, Robbie, and she'd say, I don't understand. Your husband was a dentist. Why don't you go get your nails done? And I said to her, you can't have your nails done when you're a dental assistant. You have to have clean, short nails. You can't put your hands in those gloves. They'll go right through. Ah, You should just give it all up. Anyway, she was my inspiration for creating Selma Blagojevich. So
well, I bet
we did
it was
it.
Funny.
It was. So we did a pilot, and then Calder Casino has an audition, and they have a storyboard, and my agent Kathy Tully calls me and says, "Tess, I have a great idea. Why don't you dress up as Selma Blagojevich and go to that audition? Don't break character. Go in, put your leopard on with your red wig, and go do it." And I thought, you know what? What a great idea. So I do. Now, the storyboards call for a 6-foot blonde. That's what they want, to crush this little tiny man at the slot machine after she wins. So picture this, okay? You could see it. It's on YouTube, actually. It's called Calder Casino Hugger Commercial, Calder Casino. Okay, so here's how it goes. Selma goes over to the slot machine. She presses the button, nothing. She puts the pressing again, nothing. On the third pull, she looks at it, she looks again, and she screams, "I won!" Okay? Now, she looks around to see, because she's so excited, she wants to hug somebody. She sees this innocent little man by the slot machine, and she runs, okay? And the direction from the director was, "Don't stop." So picture me, 100 pounds, piling, I'm 5'1" now, piling into this poor little man. Do you know he still hasn't spoken to me this day? He told me I bruised his ribs and that it was like getting hit by Junior Seau. A linebacker, okay? Poor thing. He was such a good sport, but I had to do what they told me to do. So I got the part.
Wow.
I got the part. So they put my character, Selma Blagojevich, on buses and billboards all over Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Broward County, and that campaign ran for 4 years. And it was a commercial on TV, and it was thrilling. So one day my daughter's driving on the turnpike, and she calls me and she goes, "Mom, are you on a billboard?" And I didn't know at the time. I said, "I know." She goes, "Mom, Selma Blagojevich is on a billboard on the turnpike." So that was really exciting and fun to do that. And that was the brilliance of Crawford.
So what are some of your future ideas that you want to do?
Okay, well, I have a wonderful little character that I created during this pandemic. Actually, I wrote about it in the Quarantina and Beyond book that we all are involved in. And, you know, one of my big dreams, Robbie, is to be the voice of an animated character. That is my dream since I'm 9 years old. So I was sitting here one afternoon, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to see if I can, because I'm not an artist. I don't draw. I said, I'm going to see if I can draw my Aunt Marion. And this was an aunt from New Jersey that I absolutely loved, Aunt Marion Serp. And I thought I would see if I could just draw her. Well, I don't know how I did it, but I did it. And I drew her, and I animated her. And I put her up on Instagram, and it got the attention of Oscar-winning actress Octavia Spencer. She loved her so much, Robbie, that she put her on her wall and said, "I love Tess LaBella, and I love Aunt Marion." So my hope is someday that somebody will see that character and want to do an animated cartoon with her or make her a part of an ensemble that's already existing. Like, I would love that. So Aunt Marion, her voice sounds like this, Robbie. And she gives you the advice that you don't think you need, but she's going to give it to you anyway. And she lived in Cedar Grove, New Jersey, and she was quite the thing in her day. She was a busybody, and She made everybody happy because she was a great cook, but she told it like it was. And that's what I'll say about her. That's her voice, Aunt Marion.
Wow.
So if you want to look her up on Instagram, it's The Real Aunt Marion. And
The Real Aunt Marion.
Yep, The Real Aunt Marion on Instagram. I think you'll find her funny. You know? So when the spirit moves me, I do a little something with her. I have a whole thing planned for Thanksgiving, but it's all improv. I don't do any writing of her script. When I get an idea, I go in the den and I found royalty-free music for her, so it's like her theme. Like you have your cool theme that you have, the music. Well, it's the same thing with Aunt Marion. She has her theme music, and then she goes into her little improv, and that's it. I do one take, and I'm done. I don't overthink it. I don't, you know, I want it to be as funny as it is coming out of my head. I want it to be that funny for her.
Wow.
So, also,
well, you're such a natural that it just comes to you, you know, which makes it so real and beautiful.
Robbie, thank you. And I'm telling you, I think that all came from the hotel. I really mean that. It was a very impressionable time in my life, being with all of those people and all those entertainers. And, you know, my father, God rest his soul, he really exposed us to some of the greatest things in life. And I thank him for that, and my mom. Another dream I had was to write a children's book, which I did, with a dear friend, Petrel Osby. And it's coming out 2021, called Merry Witchmas. And Boys, Mills, and Kane out of New York picked up the worldwide rights to it. So we're very excited about it. It's about a little witch named Ginger who believes in Santa. And all she decorates her beautiful house, and she puts, you know, she takes down the goblins and all the skeletons, and she puts up the angels and the wreaths and, you know, all of that. And she is very upset talking to the other little witches, and they're like, we don't understand. Why do you keep doing this? Every year he doesn't come to your house. So they all leave, and she says to herself, well, what can I do to get Santa to come here? And she goes, I know. I'll do what all the other human kids do. I'll write him a letter. And that's where I'll leave it, so that when the book comes out, I'll send it to you, Robbie, and I hope you'll, you know, read it and get a kick out of it. So,
well, when it does come out, send me the link on the day, and we can help you take it to a bestseller. I'll send it out to all my members.
Oh, my gosh. I just got the chills. God, that was so generous of you. Thank you so much for that. You know,
Because
I'm sorry.
That's what it takes. You know, usually you do it on a one day. You know, we just helped one of our members take her book to first place, not only in the U.S., but internationally as well. And we have another one launching her book on the 17th, and we'll be doing that for her. And then my book is coming out, so hopefully they'll do it for me, which I have 45 co-authors in my book. And then we have to all do it for the book that you're in and the book that I'm in,
right.
Quarantina and Beyond, as well.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. Thank you very much for that.
Did you ever hear the name Jane Austen from AFTRA and SAG?
Sure, I know Jane very well. She's a stunt woman. I know her very, very well.
She's also was the president of SAG and AFTRA. She's a friend of mine as well.
Oh, how lovely. Yes, so I'm a board member and a convention delegate, and just was out there last October in L.A. for the convention, and that is where I saw her and Gabby Carteris, and they picked a whole, you know, Cameron Manheim now is on as our secretary treasurer. I'm very, very proud to be a SAG-AFTRA member and board member. So it's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to have aspired to that.
How does somebody become SAG-AFTRA? Somebody asked me that one day, and I didn't know the answer.
Well, there's a couple of ways. You earn it. I earned it actually through my AFTRA. When AFTRA and SAG merged, then I was able to become SAG-AFTRA. But you can pay to join. I think it's a different. I don't want to give a price because it's different in every single state. Or you gain the rights to it when you do a movie and you have speaking lines, then you are a must join. Then you join the union. So
I see. Okay.
A lot of people in Florida, though, don't join the union because we don't have any incentives here. They had taken the incentives away, and it's a lot of non-union work down here. But for me, I don't think it affects me as much because right now, the way my career is going, I'm kind of leaving the acting part of it and really focusing on the voiceover and the author part of it and plan to be extremely devoted and heavily involved with SEMA, as are you, Robbie. And again, love to hear about your organization. So I think
how did you meet Ada and get involved with the group SEMA?
Again, a beautiful miracle and accident. A wonderful actress friend of mine, who name is Diana Norris, actually nominated me. And once they nominated me, I got in touch with Ada and Marina, and that's how it, like you said, you meet people that you feel like you've known forever, and like-minded people. It seems like God puts all of these wonderful people together to do one great cause, and I'm like so privileged to be a part of that.
Me too. I feel the same way. I'm actually honored to be a part of on the SEMA Advisory Board, as well as to be one of the winners for 2020. And I'm so looking forward to England. England has been on my bucket list for years.
Oh, same with me. We're planning on going, my husband and I, so I can't wait to give you a big hug. Be prepared.
Oh,
no, I won't
excited.
Hug you like the guy in the commercial.
Well, next time you come to California, you can stay with me. I'm in California, you know. I'm in Southern California, so you always have a home here.
Thank you. And guess what? You always have a home in Florida here. I have plenty of room. You'll gain 20 pounds when you leave. You'll have to bring those stretchy pants they talk about, but you always have a home here.
Well, I'm Portuguese, part Portuguese, but my favorite food is Italian food. And I used to have this wonderful friend that lived in Georgetown, and she used to always make me the most wonderful. And she taught me a little bit about how to add the different flavors into the sauce for spaghetti, you know, so you have.
Right.
And she was just awesome. I was like, going to her house was like the biggest treat of my life, to eat Italian food.
Oh, well, listen, I will make you anything you want. Stuffed mushrooms, stuffed artichokes. You want manigot, you want lasagna, you want linguine and white clam. What do you want? I'll make you whatever you want. That's the beauty of having that. Yeah, that's the beauty of knowing a way around the kitchen. My father always used to say, I could throw you in any kitchen from here to China and you'd survive. And you know what? This is not braggadocious. It's just that they took the time to teach me. I wish everybody would teach their children how to cook. So important.
That's true. Instead of fast food, instead of the line food, fast food.
Cook, learn how to make a.
So what during this time that we've been in lockdown, have you done some new things that, because you've had more time, we have about 5 minutes left, that kind of moved you into a new direction, or helped you to do something that you've been wanting to do for a long time, but because you've had a lot of time, you were able to do it.
Okay, well, two things I'm doing. I'm still doing work for Legends Radio, which is a very rewarding thing for Dick Robinson, and the Legends Radio Group and the Great American Songbook, but I'm also writing. So I'm writing another children's book called The Leprechaun's Promise. And I think you're going to love this, Robbie. When I was a little girl, my friend was Father Michael McNulty. And as I grew up to be a grown woman, this man was a tremendous influence on me. And before he passed, he said to me, he used to tell me these great stories about Ireland because he was from Donegal. And he used to tell me about the leprechauns. And I was just fascinated, okay, by all the stories his grandmother used to tell him. And he said to me, Tess, one day, will you do me a favor? And I said, sure. And he said, I want you to write a book called, he even gave me the title, he said, called The Leprechaun's Promise. And I said, well, what's it about? He says, that's up to you. So it's funny, a couple of weeks ago, I was on Instagram, and I happened to see this gorgeous painting. And it hit me, the whole story. And I've been trying to write this, Robbie, for 30-some years now, okay? And the whole story came to me like a movie, just like Merry Witchmas did. And we're in the process, me and Petrell, of writing it. And it's awesome. It's all about love and friendship and kindness and actually kind of a metaphor about the pandemic, but I don't mention it. I just say that I don't want to give it away, so especially since we haven't finished it yet, but let's just say this. The leprechaun has a lesson to learn about being confined.
Right.
So we're all confined, right? We're all confined. We can't go where we want to go. We can't see who we want to see. We can't do what we want to do. But that doesn't mean you become bitter. That means you take the silver lining and you do something with it. Whatever
right.
it is. A good deed. Call somebody. Tell them you love them. Write them a letter. Whatever it is. Find some way to have some kind of joy in all of this. That's kind of what the book talks about, and how nice for children to know that bully on the playground or know what it felt like to have to not go to class and be at home and be stuck and yet think about other things, you know? Think about other important things.
Yeah, your message for kids will be wonderful because they, you know, it is hard right now to be homeschooling because some of them, you know, some of the new math and everything is way beyond, you know, some of the mothers that are really struggling and trying to work and do, you know, do all the things they have to do as well.
Right.
So
it's. Yeah, that wouldn't be. I'm so grateful that I'm past that. I can barely add as it is. So that would not be my.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm past it too. But I have one of my members. She has 8 grandchildren, and so she's. And I said, I don't know how you do it. I don't think I could do it. I mean, I try to do many things, but I remember when the new math came in, I was lost at that. So.
Wow.
So we have about a minute left. What would you like to leave? A little over a minute and 32 seconds. The 45 minutes goes pretty fast. The message you'd like to leave with our listeners.
I'd like to, first of all, let me say thank you to you for this wonderful experience. I'm kind of choked up. I really mean that. I'm grateful to talk to you. You're just so kind and generous with your time and your attitude, and I love it. And I think what I'd like to leave with everybody is be kind. Be kind and stay positive, and don't let the negativity get to you. I think that's what it is. I mean, so many things. My mom had cancer through this pandemic, and my mother was the most positive person and said to me, gosh, Tess, God forbid this ever happens to you. Please don't crawl up in a ball. Be positive. Have your faith, and just do what you need to do. And I think that really changed my whole perspective. I'm going to be 61 November 18th this coming week, and I don't think I've ever been more grateful and more appreciative in my life the way I am right now. And I think that's my message.
Well, thank you, and it's been wonderful. We're down to 9 seconds, so thank you again for being on the show, and we just went off the air.
Thank you, Robbie.